Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
There can be some stats that gets skewed in the fact of you might throw a screen route for an 80-yard touchdown, and now all of a sudden you threw for 400 yards in a game or two screen routes. And, you know, we can all throw screen routes. But it's what kind of throws are you making? That's what I'm taking out of this thing the last 4 weeks is there's been some special throws that he's made at crucial times. And then sometimes it's also the ones that he's not making that are just as big. And that's, to me, what I think is significant growth in where he's at the last 4 weeks.
Middays on the Score.
Save it.
I would love to just all of a sudden throw for 400 yards. Against, oh, no, he did it again.
Against bums. Well, the throws he's not making. Did you see that throw he didn't make? Damn, he's getting good. All right, whatever, Matt Nagy. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show, and it is time to talk football with our guy here in studio, Robert Mays, the staff writer at The Ringer, host of The Ringer's NFL show. He is on Twitter at Robert Mays. What's going on? Good to see you.
It's good to be here. I appreciate you guys having me. This is a great setup. I'm used to doing podcasts and phone interviews in the comfort of my own home where it's not very fancy, so I feel very professional right now.
Do you do the thing with the podcast where you have to create some sort of, you know, like soundproof structure yourself, you know, cover yourself up with the blankets and the pillows and whatnot?
Maybe I should, but I don't. I just do it in my office and it seems to work okay.
I've seen people construct it. We have, you know, Sage Rosenfels on the show on Tuesdays and whatnot, and I was talking with him when he was in, and he's just kind of like creating out of couch cushions just this little space where it's just a little, he has no idea if it works at all. I think he just had started having fun with it too.
Maybe my producers would prefer that, but they don't complain, so fair, I'm just going to take it how it is.
You know, I do not pick games because I generally have no idea who's going to win a football game. I don't bet on the games, but every once in a while I always say that if I have a strong feeling about an outcome, I will offer it. I will share it. I think the Bears have no shot tomorrow night. None. I think this has all been fool's gold against lesser opponents, and the Cowboys are just too damn talented, and even with all their mishigas and everything that's going on, that the Bears just aren't as good.
I think that's probably true, but I do think all of the things going on with Dallas right now puts a lot more on the table than it would have a month ago. I think all that uncertainty, the offense seems to have an identity crisis. I mean, Jerry Jones coming out this week and saying that he wants to run the ball more. It's so funny because there's such a disconnect, right? Before the season, he's, I want creativity and I want something new. You get that with Kellen Moore. Dak Prescott looks like an MVP candidate for the first half of the season. But now you want to run the ball more. You can't have them both. You either wanted the creativity or you wanted to run the ball more. And so I just feel like they don't know what they want to be, and he doesn't know what they want to be, and he has undue influence on that organization in a way that other owners don't. So I'll be curious to see what they look like. If they want to run the ball against this team 35 times with Akeem Hicks back, that's fine with me. So is he playing this week?
No.
Is that happening?
Next.
Okay.
Maybe.
So
next.
Next week. Okay. Well, either way, the Bears' run defense is solid. And I just think that this team, there's a very real possibility they're going to go a little bit too far the other way. And that's been Dallas's problem in a lot of games this year. If you look back at what happened against Minnesota, they're throwing the ball extremely well, and then they're slamming it into the line for 2 yards on first and 10 every single play. Same thing happened against the Jets. So the Cowboys at their peak are so dangerous. And if they get in and they kind of get hot, I think that they could knock somebody off. But right now, I just feel like they don't know what they want to be, and that could play to the Bears' advantage. That being said, I do think they will probably lose.
The Cowboys are such an interesting case study for me because in Kellen Moore, I see an offensive coordinator that has diagnosed what his quarterback is good at. And like you said, in the first couple of weeks of this season, actually got him to throw those routes, to run those plays, to hide with the ball with a little play action more often. And those two guys, and I'm simplifying it a little bit, they have to see through the stuff that Jerry Jones creates, that Jason Garrett creates. On the other side of things, I want for that kind of synergy to happen with the Bears. I want for Matt Nagy as play caller and offensive coordinator to find this thing that Mitchell Trubisky does well, if only to learn how good one or the other is. And yet they don't seem to be able to find that thing, that constant path that it's pretty obvious Kellen Moore and Dak Prescott have stumbled onto, or at least engineered for themselves. They just keep getting thrown off by other forces around them on their own team.
I think that the Bears have been stumbling around in the dark for a little all season when it comes to finding what they want to be offensively. And it's hard because you want to do these things and you want to have it all work in concert together, but when it doesn't, you don't know which direction you want to go, right? So Mitchell Trubisky, over the last 6 weeks, has averaged more than 10 yards per attempt using play action. He's clearly very comfortable with it. But it's really difficult to be a play-action-heavy team when, one, you run out of the shotgun for the majority of your plays, and two, you don't have run plays connected to your play-action plays. You don't need to run the ball well or a lot to be a good play-action team. The math has told us that for years. But you do need to be a team that wants to have those things be connected. Because if you don't have play-action plays that look like your runs, teams aren't going to pay attention to it. So that's why teams that tend to run the ball more often are better at play action, even though they don't need to be, because it's part of their identity. And the Bears don't have that because they don't have an identity. It just seems like they're running scattered plays because they don't know what Mitch is good at. And I think that maybe that's starting to come into focus, but I still think that against a team that's not the Lions, he's not going to play nearly as authoritatively as he did last week.
Your point's well taken, and it isn't just the classic play action fake. There are so many actions in their offense that are designed to get someone to a step in the wrong direction, leaning the wrong way, eyes in the backfield, eyes somewhere they shouldn't be, that get ignored. So much of their sleight of hand has been put on enough tape now that whether it's the ghost action, whether it's the jet sweep action, a lot of it, teams are just like, get out of here with that. It's already been figured out where Nagy hasn't come up with the next thing off of that.
You have to make those things a credible threat. And I think that's what you saw with the Rams late last season is when they stopped handing the ball off to that guy coming in that jet action, teams stopped paying attention to it because it didn't matter anymore. And I just think there's so many ways they could use Cohen that they haven't. But he's also it's one of those things. Every time you want something to happen, there's a reason it shouldn't happen. He has not been good this year. He's been very bad. Even last week, remember that play where he caught the ball with one hand and it looked like a bad throw? I went back and watched that today. It was a good throw. It was a really good throw. They're playing against man coverage. He stops. He just doesn't seem to have a feel right now. So I'm thinking, you know, you say the orb motion, everything else. Maybe you would do something the Chiefs do, where you have him come into the backfield, you have him come back the other way, you throw a swing pass to him, stuff like that. That makes him a credible threat. Maybe teams start paying attention to it. But when you don't trust your players to do those things, it's hard to create credible threats. And I think that's been the most difficult part of them offensively this year is that they can't lean on these aspects because they haven't worked when they've tried to.
So the Bears have a, I don't know, 3% chance or something like that right now to make the playoffs. They're not making the playoffs.
They're not making the playoffs.
They're not making the playoffs.
I joked about it today. Though. I tweeted the Dumb and Dumber gift. It's like, so you're telling me there's a chance. Mm-hmm.
But they're not. They're not making the playoffs. Can Matt Nagy both, let's just say the Bears, right? Can they at once determine how well they can feather the nest for their next quarterback situation and redefine their offensive philosophy based around these play-action plays, runs that link with passing plays, things that work together? You know, can you find out how good Anthony Miller really is if you're changing as much of the scheme from step one as it seems Matt Nagy has been?
I think that last week was a step in the right direction. That's what I'll say. I mean, even flashes are better than what you've gotten for most of the season. I love that you're writing off Trubisky for next year, though. Do you think that if he plays like this two more times, they're not bringing him back?
No, not at all. It's going to happen. I absolutely think it's going to happen. I just think the next year's quarterback situation is a fluid one.
Sure.
Even if it does almost assuredly involve Mitch Trubisky.
I think that's probably what will happen. I think if they don't bring in competition, they're lying to themselves. But when I watched that game last week, it's almost like I'm getting pulled into two directions because it's like, oh, they win. They won. There were some nice plays. But part of me is thinking, oh, no. Like, is he playing too well? Is this going to ruin what they should be doing this offseason? It's kind of this weird creeping fear that I have when he actually does play well.
Well, I've thought a lot about this. And this came up several weeks ago. We talked with the Morning Guys about it, too, about when we say, when we use the word competition, let's be honest about how these things go down and how many we've seen going back how many years in, with whatever franchise. There's always a thumb on the scale. Mm-hmm. There's always a preferred winner of a competition. These things are never objective. The human nature of the coach, the GM, and what players know and what they see, these things generally don't work out well. There's the financial aspect too, but If you're going out and getting a veteran to ostensibly compete, at some point, both Pace and Nagy will have they will already know who they want to be their quarterback on opening day, and whether they understand they're doing it or not, it's going to be engineered to get him there. Whether they're, you know, because that's, you don't see him in the exhibition games, right? So they can say, well, we know what we see at practice, right?
I think that there are models to do this, and I completely agree with you. I think that there is somebody you want to win the race. But I do think that having someone in the building is the step you need to make. It's the step that Jacksonville didn't take. It's a step that Tennessee did take this year. Going out and getting Tannehill, even if you want Mariota to win the job because you drafted him, you want it to work out. Just being able to go to a different quarterback if you need to is a step the Bears need to take. That the biggest mistake you can make is solely riding with that guy and having hope be your plan. As long as you have a backup plan, even if it takes 3 weeks, as long as there's one there, that is the most important thing. And too many teams haven't done that because they don't want to admit that they made a mistake, or they don't want to plan for their mistake.
Or in this case, they didn't want to challenge what might be a fragile psychological makeup or fragile confidence, shall we say, of a quarterback who probably couldn't handle the threat.
I think this year they shouldn't have done anything. I think you needed to believe that he was going to get better because that's what you built for. You built the team for him to be the quarterback financially, your window, all of those things. But now you know. Now it's 2 years in. It's 2 years in the same system. It's 2 years with the same offensive players. There's no reason to try to rationalize this anymore. You have to at least bring someone else in to push him or have him be an option or someone else be an option if you need to go in a different direction. That's it. You cannot roll with this quarterback situation again next season. It's not tangible.
It's Bears Friday on a Wednesday today on The Score. Bears Friday brought to you by Dunkin'. Chicago runs on Dunkin'. Usually we have Hub Arkish in this space. Hub's a little under the weather, so Robert Mays of The Ringer, kind enough to stop by and hang out for a little while, talk football. I wonder, Robert, though, I agree with your assessment of how it needs to change. It has to. Every non-rookie veteran who was brought in to start this past season makes $17 million or more. Now, you can argue with that money a little bit if you do the Tom Brady thing because of the guarantees and whatnot and what the cap number is and whatever, but it's Tom Brady and you all know where that was going. Are they going to do that? Do they get to a point where it's find the guy, pay him $17 million, and then ride with a training camp conversation that will be, like Dan said, thumb on the scale the entire way, one way or another?
I think that's difficult to do. I think that they would have to. The way that I look at it now and the way that Mitch is playing, I was on the Andy Dalton train for a long time, and I still am in terms of the best option for the price because he will have the lowest salary of any veteran quarterback in the NFL next season at $17
million. Right.
But I think that as I kind of be more honest with myself and really kind of take stock of it all, I think it's going to be more like the Ryan Tannehill situation in Tennessee, and I think the options for that are a guy like Case Keenum. Somebody like that, where it's not going to be $17 million. You're paying him $6 million. And I see Dan's face right now, and that's the face I would make as well.
Is it pained? I'm not looking.
It's pained. I have the same pain. Is he grabbing at his left arm? I have the same
pain.
More
like gas cramps.
Oh, yeah. No, I got it.
Trust me, no one's excited about it. But I think a guy like that, where it's Case Keenum, you can throw Mariota in that conversation. Somebody that's going to be a free agent that you can actually determine their salary structure, I think is going to be more realistic. I don't think that there would be a way. I mean, you look at Tannehill's contract this year, they're actually paying him like $2 million because the Dolphins took a huge chunk of that money.
That's right.
So with Dalton, I don't know if Cincinnati would do that. It seems like they wouldn't, considering they're the cheapest franchise in the NFL by a wide margin. So I think that you're going to have to get even more creative and even less ambitious than that, which it's not enticing and it's not attractive. But again, it's something else. And I think that's what you need.
When Matt Nagy was hired, we know that he was brought in to institute his offensive vision. We're not quite sure what it is because, like you say, and like Sage Rosenfels has pointed out numerous times, everything has been so desultory and disconnected that we don't know really what the vision is. And the fact that even they were good last year, they didn't really score that many points. Is he allowed? Does he have enough juice still? Is he allowed to say, regardless of who the quarterback is, regardless of who we bring in here, I know the plays that I want to run and how I want to run them? Or is it beholden on him? Do they need to have an organizational meeting and say, hey, you know, Matt, whatever you wanted to do, whatever you thought you were supposed to do, hasn't been good enough for you to earn that. Figure something out that builds around what these guys can actually do and do something cohesive that's realistic and not fantasy.
I understand that I'm talking myself into this when I say it, and I've said it pretty much all season. I just think that with how poor the quarterback has played and how limited the quarterback is in terms of his mental processing, what you can put on his plate, I think it has short-circuited what the offense can be. And again, I'm sure that's a rationalization. I'm trying to talk myself into the best version of what's still possible. But I do think I'd like to see whatever he can do offensively with a different, more competent quarterback to just have more stuff on the menu. And maybe he's not the guy. Maybe he doesn't have the juice, and maybe it goes horribly wrong when they do bring someone else in. But I at least want to see it, because I do think that it just completely sabotages what you can be as a play caller when you have no faith in the guy running the offense. I was told that they took about a third of the amount of plays, that about two-thirds of the amount of plays he would have in Kansas City are off the table now because of what Trubisky can do. That is what someone told me recently. It's like 50 to 150 in terms of the normal play call sheet. It's that's absurd. And I just think that really limits what you can be as a play caller. So if that's the case, I just want to see someone who puts more on the table for him to create that cogent plan.
I'm with you on that. And I think the Bears probably owe it to themselves to see out the Matt Nagy hire, right? Whether that's with Mitchell Trubisky or not. But there are still other factors that you know, decisions that got made where you look at Matt Nagy and go, man, not a lot of coaches do that. Whether it's kicking from this hash mark or that one, whether it's substituting improperly, whether it's after a timeout, not having a play call ready to roll. And that kind of stuff is really difficult for me to separate from a panic or an identity crisis because of a quarterback for whom he had to subtract two-thirds of the play off the sheet.
I agree with you. That's the stuff that to me is most distressing. But I also think when you're the head coach and the play caller and your play calling brain is kind of broken because of what you're dealing with, it can affect your decision-making brain. And again, I understand that's a rationalization. I'm talking myself into this. But at this point, you kind of have to. He's going to be the coach next year. So I might as well look at this and say, what can the best possible outcome of this be? And that's maybe it's not. Maybe when he gets another quarterback, the same stuff still happens, and it's time to move on.
Yeah, it's not a controlled experiment at this point.
Yes.
No.
And that's the thing. It just – we only have it with these circumstances, and I just want to see it in different circumstances before I make the ultimate judgment. Matt Nagy did not pick Mitchell Trubisky. That is not something he wanted. He did not want to build his offense around this person. So if he can have some hand in the next quarterback they choose, then there are no more excuses. There's no more explaining this away, because this is what he would have wanted to some degree. Even if it's not the guy he gets to hand pick, if he has some input on where things go from here, then it is laid at his feet in a way that I don't think it is right now.
Our guest is Robert Mays, the Chicago-based NFL writer and broadcaster with The Ringer. This is usually the day we talk to Hub Arkish, but Hub is under the weather, and that means he's also going to have Nick Shepkowski in for him on our Sportsbook at Ameristar pregame show, which is going to be at Tavern in the Green in Evergreen Park tomorrow. It's Nick Shepkowski, Patrick Mandley, and Olin Krutz from 6 until kickoff, followed by the two-hour postgame with Nick and Patrick and James Big Cat Williams, brought to you by Miller Lite. Hold true, and they're not the only people there, because Thursday the McNeil and Parkins show is also going to be there. So it's a whole afternoon and
roadshow
evening of Score programming that is taking place at Tavern in the Green. We still have Bulls tickets to give away as well, but we have another segment with Robert Mays talking Bears and NFL. Keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score. Save this stuff for the air, actually, because, you know, they pay us to actually talk about things like this that we were talking about for free right now.
I thought it was for the fart jokes in the midday midway.
Yeah, some of that, too. Oh, okay. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, Purdue, and more. Season and single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. The Ringer's Robert Mays. Yeah, see? A little extra there. Got a bonus for it.
It's good timing.
Yeah, Robert Mays is in studio with us to talk a little bit of football. He's taking the place of Hub Arkish, who takes a village to replace Hub, with Nick Shepkowski in for him on the Ameristar pregame show and postgame show as well. So we have been discussing Bears and this the quarterback math here of how this all works, the number, what they're going to pay, what constitutes competition. And it sounds like the kind of scenarios that we're describing here are really just having a more trustworthy backup.
A guy you can turn to.
Competitor.
Guy you can turn to. A guy you feel can give you a chance to win. And I think that Chase Daniel was a stand-in. Chase Daniel was somebody that knew the system, and Chase Daniel was someone that could help Mitchell Trubisky along. I don't think Chase Daniel was somebody that you could comfortably go to for an extended period of time. And I do think, I mentioned it before, I think the Tannehill model makes sense. I think it's that kind of guy. Ryan Tannehill was not supposed to be this when they brought him in. He was supposed to be a break in case of emergency option. He played very well. I think that there are guys out there with higher ceilings than Chase Daniel that you would feel better turning to if you had to. And I think that, again, guys like Case Keenum, if it's Mariota, Keenum to me is a perfect example. He's a high variance guy who has played well in stretches that is somebody you would never want to be your starting quarterback for extended seasons, but I think that he can give you a pretty high ceiling for a short period of time. And I, again, none of these options are good. None of them are attractive,
right,
but you have to get creative when you've done what they've done.
No, a fact remains, best option for the Bears is that Mitch Trubisky starts playing like the best quarterback in that draft class. It's not going to happen.
It was off the table about a year and a half ago.
It's not going to happen. I mean, that we waved bye-bye to that a long time ago, and so you're left with those options, which means I think we need to talk about the pending quarterback carousel that's about to hit the NFL and how it relates to the Bears. With Ron Rivera getting fired and Cam Newton then getting foot surgery, I think that that's the first domino to go on the NFL quarterback carousel. I also think, and you've wrote about this some on The Ringer, that the Tua Tagovailoa injury begins and maybe is part of, maybe they're like concentric carousels. That'd be, the insurance on that would be difficult. But Tua matters in this conversation because of where, how, and if he'll be drafted.
Yes, and I think that the team where it becomes a huge deal is Miami. If you look at the draft and where it currently sits right now, you'd assume that Burrow probably goes number one.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, I think that that makes sense with Cincinnati. If Miami picks at five or so, it's pretty much where they're projected. Why, if you can't pick two and you don't feel good about any of those other guys, you just bypass the quarterback. And if you do that, now does a team like the Chargers end up picking a quarterback? It's just these things that end up mattering. And if you list off the teams that could have a different starting quarterback next year than the one they started with in week one, you get to 15 in a hurry. San Diego, Oakland. I think Denver will probably roll with Locke if he keeps playing like this. I think it makes the most sense based on the resources you've spent.
But he wasn't week one.
He wasn't week one. So that's that. So there it is. So and just, you can really list off these teams. Miami, if they end up picking someone. The Bears, possibly. Carolina.
Washington.
Washington. I mean, it's really one of those things where the turnover is such that you could see a ton of movement. But even, honestly, even New England is in that conversation. But there's so many things that could happen that could stifle that movement. And if it does, are these guys less in demand than you thought, and are they available for less than you might have thought? And I think that's why what happened with Foles was so interesting, because there was only one team and they were negotiating against themselves. Last year was really only three teams that you thought were in the market to get a new quarterback. So it was Miami, Denver, and Jacksonville. That was it. This year, it explodes. And I have no idea how it's going to go, but I do think there's going to be a ton of movement.
I want to squeeze in a little baseball headline here. Cole Hamels has signed with the Braves. Huh. 1 year. $18 million. That was broken by
Cole.
Jeff Passan. That's a nice little deal for a good Mr. Chunk of Baseball change. Face.
I really messed up not being a left-handed pitcher.
Right?
Really did.
Oh, it's the best way to go. Yeah.
Back even quarterback, just, left-handed pitcher.
Even if you just got the one pitch, just be left-handed, stick around for a while, maybe you get yourself an $18 million deal. Good for Cole Hamels.
Wow. That's, he really does only have one pitch now, too. So,
I mean, he throws other pitches, but correct. The one is the one you like.
The plus changeup is it's what's keeping him in the league and got him another payday right there. So wow. He is not going to join the White Sox. White Sox said to be continuing to talk to Zach Wheeler, and we were told by Ken Rosenthal at MLB Network that he thinks that a deal could get done with Zach Wheeler with one of his interested suitors today.
Yeah, well, as soon as today. That's the favorite hot stove phrase, right? As soon as today, which ends up being, I don't know, 3 weeks later, something like that. But if it breaks, you'll hear it. I wonder then, with the rest of this quarterback carousel, if that depresses marketplace value for your $17 million, your starting quarterback kind of stuff. If Andy Dalton is the guy to go get in your mind to be wins above replacement quarterback, to be that guy that makes a couple of plays and is the dude that takes that job, what then is the responsibility of a front office that is facing some fairly serious cap decisions with guys like Danny Trevathan going free agent, with guys ending or going into their last year of their contract, A.A. Jackson, who are going to need long-term deals. So as you try and structure, you know, the rest of the nest, so much depends on whatever quarterback situation that you've kind of constructed for yourself. What are the duties of Ryan Pace outside the quarterback?
It depends on what you want from the quarterback. Something we've been discussing. If you want a starter, then I think you need to do what you need to do to fit that $17 million into your budget. if you don't think that he's going to be a legitimate competition to Mitchell Trubisky, and again, you just want to break in case of emergency option, then you don't have to worry about that. If you really do want a guy that you think can be your starting quarterback, I think you cut in other places. I think you let a guy like Danny Trevathan go, see maybe if you can bring Kwiatkowski back for however much. You have to cut Prince Amukamara. Kyle Long is most likely gone. Yeah. You make those decisions, and they'll have the money. It's not going to be great, and it's going to be tight. You're not going to be able to go get better in a lot of spots, but they will have the money if they make the decisions necessary. If you want to, I think extending Leonard Floyd is probably the answer in order to get his number down from that 13. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd want to commit to him long term, but I think that committing to him on a three-year deal and cutting his cap number next year from 13 to 6 probably makes more sense than wasting $7 million when you don't have any money. So there are decisions to be made that can get them in a place where $17 million is not out of the question. $17 million for a quarterback is cheap. I also think this is probably not going to happen. But if you do go out and get one of those guys, the starter money, and you look admit to yourself he's probably going to start, I would try to shop Mitchell Trubisky for a late-round pick swap. Because you've already paid him the signing bonus. You might as well get that base salary off the books if you don't think he's going to be your starter. I think a team would trade for him as a backup because he's still talented. He's still a top two pick. Young. Sure, there are scouting reports everywhere that people liked him. And if you can just give him away for nothing, his contract right now, his base salary is a backup base salary. And that would make more sense for some other team than it would for the Bears.
Yeah, I just wonder if his traits fit being a backup when that's the guy who at the very minimum has to know the entire playbook
mm-hmm.
and pretty much be comfortable with all of it. You know, the last thing you want is a backup is like, well, all this, some of the stuff we've been running, we got to retrofit this all now that it's your turn.
Luke Falk played this year. That's all yeah. I'm saying. Luke right. Falk played this year. Brandon Allen got snaps. The pool is pretty shallow when it comes to quarterbacks. He's still talented. I would not be surprised if a team took a chance on him. But the problem with that plan is you have to make that decision. It's an emotional one. It's one where you have to admit fault. And I do think he'll be on the roster next year, even if it's not the most prudent direction.
Has anybody tried to estimate or just some idea of how much money Colin Kaepernick would want? Do we know?
Like, I don't
only,
know if there's...
Only at first. There was that report that came out like the moment everything came down that he was out of the league and looking for another job, and it was like starter-type money, like the $20 million range, something like that. But I don't know
how real
updated.
That was.
Yeah,
so
no,
I have no idea what sort of credence there is to any of those rumors. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
It'd be a magic bullet. I mean, if he would take that $6 million Case Keenum deal or whatever
If
it
he'd
is,
take 10!
Right, whatever it is. If he'd take 17. I mean, that at age 32 with his skill set and the stuff Nagy wants, it's right there.
It makes way too much sense. I just don't think it's going to happen. I'm not sure he'll ever play in the league again, even though he should.
Derek Anderson will get another start before he does, probably, and it's really unfortunate.
It's another good name to throw.
We had the Ron Rivera news come down yesterday. If you were the agent for Ron Rivera, Robert Mays, who's calling you first, and when are they calling?
I think Cleveland makes sense to me mm-hmm. because I think Dallas wants – I would say Dallas wants something flashier than that. I think Ron Rivera is a good coach, but Dallas doesn't make the most sense to me. I think Cleveland because when teams go wrong, they tend to overcorrect. And with Kitchens, the clear lack – discipline is such a stupid football word, but they just are so – they're not put together. They really are not on the same page. And I think that Ron Rivera is a very good head coach when it comes to the managerial aspects of it. He is an organizer. He's a manager of people. He's really good at it. And I do think that's what a team like Cleveland misses. Even if you want to keep Todd Monken as your offensive coordinator, I think he's really smart. And some, maybe Rod wants his own guy, everything else. But he's been willing to take on coordinators that were not necessarily his first choice. Yeah. So I do think he'll sit out next year. I don't think he'll coach just based on everything he said and his family and everything else. It would surprise me if he took a job right away if it wasn't a really good job. But the team I think makes the most sense is definitely the Browns.
I think the Browns did it today. If literally today. And they're like, Freddie, thanks. And said, hey, Ron, just come here.
Would they say thanks?
Yeah, here's an orange polo shirt. Put it on and get to work. That immediately the effects on that team and that young team and those stars and everybody that just to get have a grown up in there with that kind of gravitas, you're closer to winning a Super Bowl. And it's not this year, but you are immediately the moment he walks through that door, you're closer to winning a Super Bowl.
I think that the conversation about head coaching traits is so interesting. And David Tepper came out yesterday and he said a lot of things that I have said and kind of believe. in that it's best to hire an offensive-minded head coach because it allows you to have sustainability. I've talked to guys in the Chiefs, and they just talk about how the fact that Andy is the CEO of that franchise and that he can never go anywhere, it allows you to be successful year after year after year. If you have – look at Atlanta. As soon as Kyle Shanahan was gone, the wheels fell off.
Yep.
It's hard to be good every single year because you don't have sustainability and you don't have reliability with your play caller because the guy could be hired away at any time. That being said, if you look at some of the situations that have been successful this year, especially, look at John Harbaugh. If you hire the right people, you can still do it. I've softened my stance on this recently just because we've seen how many times it went wrong this season where a team – I wrote about it. It was my big offseason project. How many teams were chasing the McVay? And it's gone wrong in a lot of ways, and I thought it could. So maybe that's not necessarily the best model now. Maybe you do just hire somebody that can get the right coordinators in place, that is somebody that runs your whole locker room and is an adult in the room. I'm more receptive to that idea than I would have been 6 months ago.
Speaking of Sean McVay disciples, what do you make of where Green Bay is now and what they could potentially recapture over the final couple weeks?
I think they could still be okay. I think their ceiling is very high. They played in snow last week. They played San Francisco, who is a buzzsaw in the right situation. They're also losing Bulaga in that game completely torpedoed them. They have zero tackle depth. It's been that way for years. Somehow they have 17 guards but no tackles. It just seems to be that way all the time. So I feel like they still have an incredibly high ceiling. And I know that I have a blind spot for Rodgers, and I admit that consistently. I look at the numbers. I'm typically someone who ascribes to stats and all of that pretty ardently. And then I look at Rodgers, and I was like, that's fake. That doesn't matter to me. It's just like that is not real.
Not my Aaron.
I will be the last person to throw dirt on him. And I think you see some of the throws he made against the Giants. Even if it's not consistent from play to play that it was same way it was five years ago, I still think that what he can be on any given drive is still terrifying. Anybody who trots out what his QBR is, I would love to strap them into a chair and get a couple drinks in them and say, would you really want to see him in January? Honestly, would you really want to? And the answer will be no. And they still have enough talent defensively. I still think they're figuring it out. I had a conversation with the GM a couple months ago. We were just talking about how teams change over the course of the year. And he told me, he said, you never know who you are until Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving was a week ago. And I think that that's what happens when you have a team with a lot of defensive turnover, which that, especially in the secondary, they do. I still feel like there is a version of that team that can be really, really scary by Christmas.
Robert, thanks for coming down.
This is fun, man.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
A lot of fun. Robert Mays of The Ringer, who is pinch hitting for Hub today. When we come back, I'm going to give away Bulls tickets. However, keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score. This segment's brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Give me, Connor, give me a single-digit number.
4.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Caller 4 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, will win a pair of tickets to see the Bulls against Golden State at the United Center. December 6th, so it's 4th, so it's 2 days from now.
You got time. Yep. You got time. Get yourself in. Go
That's
see a game.
Courtesy of 670 The Score, Chicago's official radio home of the Bulls. Thanks to our guests today, Mike Florio, Pete Futek, and Robert Mays. Thanks to the producers. They were Mike Chen, Rick Camp, and the executioner, Ray Diaz. We are going to do transition with Lawrence Holmes in just a couple of minutes here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.